This is Molly Smith introducing our annual Bringing America Back to Life speaker series. At this annual event, we invite those on the front lines of the pro-life and family movement to come together for a convention dedicated to exploring the full spectrum of issues and challenges that confront us as we continue to fight for the sanctity of human life, to protect our God-given family structure. We trust you will be edified and encouraged as you listen to our fine roster of speakers who by their articulate, thoughtful, expert presentations eloquently defend the right to life. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Gabriella Kubi, author of The Global Sexual Revolution, Destruction of Freedom in the Name of Freedom. Gabriella was a student of sociology at the Free University in Berlin in 1967, a pivotal year of upheaval and rebellion among students. After her conversion to the Catholic faith in 1997, she became a successful author of books on spiritual and political issues and an international speaker. She says, "As a sociologist, I observe the developments of our society. As a mother, I am committed to the future of the next generation. As a Catholic, I try to live what I believe." End of quote. Pope Benedict XVI said, "Mrs. Kubi is a brave warrior against ideologies that ultimately result in the destruction of man." The title of her presentation is "The Global Sexual Revolution, Destruction of Freedom in the Name of Freedom."
Friends, hello. I'm delighted to be here. I'm very honored that I'm invited to come all over from Bavaria to Cleveland and to experience this post-election atmosphere in the USA. Back in Germany, we trembled with these elections. A few months before the election, I thought if I was an American, I could not vote at all. And the closer the election came, I really became fearful of a victory of Hillary Clinton. And then I actually did rejoice when Donald Trump was elected. And what I can see here now, he is not our savior, but there is a new opening which none of us expected. And what I experience here now is that the wind has turned and the wind is blowing into our sails now, which we haven't experienced for decades of this severe battle. The battle will get more severe, but now the wind in this country has turned. And I also remember when Obama, before his election, was in Berlin and shooting photos in Berlin. And then, I don't know, when he came out with this phrase, "Yes, we can." This is a totally American phrase. That's the optimism of Americans, "Yes, we can." And now this has turned. Now we say, "Yes, we can," but we say something else with it, with the help of God. So here's this upheaval, which I'm very happy to experience for 2 days. Europe is in a state of depression. Germany is in a state of depression. How could we not be in a state of depression, having the demographic development we have of 1.3 women per children per woman, and an uncontrolled flood of migration into our country. Germany is the center of it because it's the richest country in Europe, invited by our Chancellor Angela Merkel, uncontrolled. This is only the beginning, because millions and millions and millions of people in very severe situations are just waiting to come to the promised land, Europe. When they arrive, they realize it is not the promise is not kept. But that is the situation in our country. I was very moved when at the beginning of the conference there was the pledge to the flag. If you did something like this in Germany, the whole nation would call you a Nazi. It would be absolutely impossible to do anything like this, yeah? The only time when we are allowed to be, say, oh, it's good to be German, is when we win the football World Cup. That's the only time we are allowed to put flags on houses or on cars. Never at any other point. It is immediately stigmatized as nationalism, even Nazism. So how can you not be depressed? That is the atmosphere in Europe. I've been traveling a lot around the world to countries I've never been to, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Ukraine, and, well, Ukraine is Europe, but the other countries, and my heart just bleeds for Europe. Europe is such a magnificent culture, founded on Christianity, deep roots in Christianity. You have these churches, these cities, the art, the science, which is also grew up on Christian roots. Architecture, music, unparalleled. And when you travel in Europe, you see that, yeah? Different brands of Christianity all over Europe. And we are from inside now destroying that. And my heart is bleeding because this is happening. But being a Christian, we know that God is in command. We have to practice our faith to actually be carried by that belief, that it actually carries us through, that we do know God is in command of what is happening in our time. Before I get into this topic of gender ideology, let me say a few words about who is speaking to you, about my own path to God. I'm come from a Protestant family without much practice of faith. I was baptized with 8 years of age by my own will. I came to my mother in tears. Mommy, will I get into heaven if I'm not baptized? So my mother had her five children baptized. Then I got into the student movement because I had a left-wing father, so the path was open, and studied sociology in Berlin. There's a German word, Mitläufer. You just run along. You are not a leader, but you just go with the tide. This is what I did at the time, but I always realized something is very wrong about this. Then I had an experience of God in 1973, a long time ago. And from then on, I consciously searched for God, but in the social area in which I was at home, that was psychology, left-wing politics, and esoterics. That search lasted for 20 years. I married. We have three beautiful children. Our marriage broke up. Never in contact with the sacrament of marriage. Not my mind was not enlightened, or our mind, what marriage really is. And at that moment of greatest despair in my life, a young woman came to my door, rang the bell, had heard that this family is breaking up, brought me a novena with the great promises of Jesus Christ, greater than we can grasp, and said, pray. In my despair, I did pray in front of a Buddha statue and lots of other things I had collected during these 20 years. And at the end of this novena, I knew I would become a Catholic. There was never any doubt. The path was very straight then, and there's no doubt to the present day, and I'm incredibly thankful every day that I did find the flow of grace within the church. This flow of grace cannot be stopped. It is always there. We will have less churches, less priests, but still, as long as we can travel, we will find places to dip into this flow of grace, which comes to Catholics through one path is, and maybe the main path is the sacraments. And we can nourish our thirst for God out of this flow of grace, which is available in our church, despite all the very troubling developments about which John Henry has just given us a very clear image. My first book was called My Path to Mary, The Power of Living Faith. It was a diary of my conversion. It could just as well be called My Path to Jesus. In fact, it took me 20 more years to actually find a real living relationship to the Mother of our God. And I find it a painful situation that we Christians are separated by on our way we perceive the Mother of our Lord Jesus Christ. Then after that first, I sort of went around, gave witness here. I come from all this zeitgeist into the church. Then I discovered, and we are coming now close to our theme, the issue of sexuality. And I realized that it is the misuse of this beautiful divine gift of sexuality that gets the society into chaos and into trouble. It is the misuse of sexuality is behind contraception, behind abortion. And if we go wild with sexuality, if we do away with all moral limitations of sexuality, of course we need contraception and of course we need abortion. And I think it has to be parallel. We have to come back. We have to re-harness sexuality within a faithful marriage. You know, we have broken it up and it's all over the place, addicting people. We have to I don't know whether the word is correct, get it back into the vessel of marriage. This has to go parallel with this beautiful, wonderful, important fight and battle for the sacredness of life from conception to the very natural end. I wrote my first book on gender ideology, which is not a term familiar to you, as I sort of find out. In Germany now, people know what we are talking about when we speak about gender ideology. Here, I don't think you use that word so much. I wrote my first book 11 years ago. It's called The Gender Revolution, Relativism in Action. Could there be more relativism than not accepting that we are men and women? I mean, it's just lunatic asylum, nothing else, yeah? And I started writing and talking about this 11 years ago. And people, there's a German expression that says, you hear the grass growing. Yeah, she's exaggerating. People didn't take it serious. And the grass indeed was growing. And now people see it has permeated the whole culture. We have 200 professors, I think 99% are women, who teach gender studies at the universities. That is, they indoctrinate the next academic generation with this mad theory that we can choose our sex, that we can change our sex at will, which immediately means we can live out our sexual drive in any way we want. The drive of sexuality, which is laid by our Creator into our physical, into our existence, into our what we are, into our being, the aim of it is procreation. That is the creation of a new human being. If that drive is severed from its meaning, it becomes destructive and tends to enslave the human being and turn into an addiction. This is what we see. This is what is happening. We have this global plague of pornography, which is usually connected with addiction. Yeah. So the basic reason is, well, before that is we have fallen away from God. We do not accept the conditions of our human being. And we say we don't want to have anything to do with the aim of sexuality, that is procreation. We cut it from procreation. Then it all goes wrong. And this, we are in the middle of this. Sexuality is the creative force in a human being. Through the sexual act, a new human being is being created. There is no greater work of art than a human being with its unlimitless potential. When we look at a newborn, we are struck by the mystery. There's so much more to it than flesh and blood. The human being has a soul, and we can see it. You know, if you see a sleeping baby, you can see that mystery behind the eyelids. It sort of shines through the mystery of the human being. And I've just become a grandmother with my first grandchild, with great joy. And there you have this tiny creature, this mystery in your hands, and you can feel there's more to it than flesh and bones. This soul is not created by the sexual act. This soul comes from God. And as believers, we know this soul is eternal. And our, as John Henry already said, as our deepest wish for our children is that they will reach eternal life, which is promised to us by Jesus Christ. All this has broken down. Large parts of Western society have fallen away from God and landed in the two-dimensional flatland of desire. The autonomous individual has usurped the throne of God. It says there is no God. I decide what is good and evil. I don't care about commandments. I adore myself. I adore my own creative power, and our strongest creative power is the power of sexuality. I adore something that is not God. What is the biblical word for that? I adore an idol. The Bible warns us 200 times of adoring idols. Why? God needs sacrifice. Our God has sacrificed his own son to redeem us. The false God, the idols, also want sacrifice. What is the sacrifice for the idol of sexuality? 50 million slaughtered, torn apart, poisoned children every year. That is our sacrifice for idolizing sexuality as a god. In Revelation 22:15, it says, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. Blessed are those who wash their robes so that they may have the right to the tree of life and that they may enter the city by the gates. Outside are the dogs and sorcerers and the sexually immoral and murderers and idolaters and everyone who loves and practices falsehood. Even to quote the scripture has become dangerous. If you read a quote like this, it may happen, has happened in countries, that you are accused of hate speech and even taken to court. So it is a way of not being nice. I have never been nice in the work I do. I'm proud to say. So I have demonstrations often when I speak and so on. It is a way of not being nice simply to quote the scriptures. Gender ideology is falsehood per se. Falsehood that does not even try to hide. It just says what is, isn't. There's a new word for this. I've learned it just a few months ago. Post-factual. We don't care about facts anymore. We define what is fact. We define what is reality. We don't care if you say you are a man. Yes, of course I will say, call you a man. Yeah, there are these YouTube videos on campuses. They are asked, if I say I'm 20 meters high and a Chinese and a man, what would he say? Well, if you feel good about it, it's fine with me. Yeah, those are the answers. Yeah. If we deny the existence of God, everything loses its meaning. Our life loses its meaning. Our bodies lose their meaning. The meaning of the body of man and woman is so obvious, nobody can deny it. The body calls us into fatherhood and motherhood. If that meaning is denied, the person has to fabricate its own identity, just invent it. And since there's nothing else than this invented identity of people, they become very, very aggressive defending this invented identity. If that identity was destroyed or shown that it's just a lie and false, there would be nothing left for the individual. I think that is a dynamic which explains some of the very aggressive, increasingly aggressive actions of the LGBT lobby. So now let's go into this, speak about what is gender ideology. I want to show you, the first book was 11 years ago. This is the Global Sexual Revolution, and the subtitle is important, Destruction of Freedom in the Name of Freedom. Yeah, all this is sold to us as tolerance and as freedom, but in reality we see freedom, the basic democratic freedoms, are being squeezed and pieces cut off and put out of function. This is the process we are in a new totalitarianism arising in front of our eyes. How did all this come about? I told you I was in Berlin at the time of the student movement in 67. Then I already left Berlin and went into the province of Germany and another university in 67. But I was sort of in that upheaval at the time. For the young people here, I want to just describe to you a little bit what it was like before that 68 student rebellion. Because you won't believe it, yeah? It's like a fish swimming in dirty water and who has never seen clear water. You believe that is the normality, but it is not. Before that upheaval, divorce was rare. The woman movement had, thank God, achieved equal rights. That was indeed necessary, but had not yet demolished male authority and motherhood. Father and mother were still clearly defined, and marriage and family were anchored in society, religion, education, protected by social sanctions and by laws. The state had no strategies to change these roles by political action. Education was considered to be a way of teaching the child the treasures and skills of our culture, and virtues, believe it or not. When have you heard the word virtue last in any meaningful way? Yeah? It was clear a child has to be educated to be able to exercise virtue, and we ourselves also. Of course, the children had to be shielded from sexuality to protect their innocence, and to protect their very childhood and family needs an unsexualized space. And that was all that was normal until the student rebellion broke out. At the end of the 60s, this rebellion swept over from California. It was already going on in California, Berkeley University, and came over to Europe. There are also other transfers between our continents. The Institute for Social Research, the left-wing institute of the Frankfurt School, some may know about that, they had emigrated, Adorno, Horkheimer, to the United States and actually laid here the foundation for the sexualization of children and youth. So there, it goes both ways. Evil goes in both ways. Good things also. There were three impulses for that student rebellion. They are all intimately connected and go together. The first was communist ideologies, ideologization, which is amazing because at the time a wall cut through the middle of Berlin, which nobody really liked. 68, the Soviet tanks rolled into Prague and extinguished the democratic revolution, which was rising up there. strangely, and I still don't have really the explanation for this, how could the minds of this student generation suddenly be inspired and grasp communism, communist ideology? It had proven, the gulags were there. Yeah, we were all, somehow we, in Germany at least, but that is still not a sufficient explanation, we were all banned by the Holocaust. This was the only evil we know, and it's now part of German identity to just look at the Holocaust and nothing else. Yeah, it has become part of our identity in Germany. Why did we sort of hook on to that ideology? The ideology went through changes. Could somebody bring me some water, please? Kindly. Is it there? Oh, yeah, sorry. Marxist theory says the world will be delivered into everlasting happiness by freeing the proletariat, the proletarians. That did not work. It was obvious it did not work. The Berlin people said, go to the other side of the town. So it was over with the proletariat because of the wealth which was produced by capitalism. So it changed into cultural Marxism. And cultural Marxism said, who is the new revolutionary part of population? And they discovered the minorities. Of course, all women are part of the minorities. Then the homosexuals, any kind of minority, was discovered as the revolutionary subject. So the second impulse of that movement was radical feminism. As I said already, feminism was important. We had to fight for equal rights. We needed that. But it turned into radical radical feminism, and that meant the right for abortion, a fierce battle against motherhood. Get out of the slavery of motherhood was the battle cry of Simone de Beauvoir, who wrote the most important book in that area. And it demolished, really, feminism, went against men, went against women as mothers, went against the child and said, it's our freedom to kill the child in the womb. This is part of our freedom. And they're still battling for world human right to kill the child. This battle, as you all know, is not in no way over. And the third impulse, and they all go together to the present day, is so-called sexual liberation. At the time, there were two communes in Berlin, and they propagated, lived, and were in the media, sex, anybody with everybody, also with children, in front of children, and amongst children. Pedophilia, the Green Party in Germany, proposed legislation into the 90s to legalize pedophilia. Yeah, the scandal is now in the open, and they are all saying, yes, we will all clear that was a mistake. But the media don't care about mistakes if the left wing makes mistakes. Yeah, it is no big deal for the media. They just say it wasn't right, and that's it. So this is the beginning of sexualizing children. And it also had predecessors, that one of them was Wilhelm Reich, a pupil of Sigmund Freud. And in the pre-war era, he founded a movement, the Sexpol movement. He was a communist also. He wanted to bring down bourgeois society. And he said the best way to do this is by sexualizing children and youth. Yeah, and he went around and said, children have a right for sexuality. Let them live out their sexuality amongst themselves with grown-ups in any way they like. Now we have this policy by the leading elites of our earth. Yeah, it's the United Nations and the European Union who actually power in that direction and to get all these programs into our schools. The movement took yet another turn, yet another radicalization, and it is an American philosopher who actually formulated the theory, the gender theory. It is Judith Butler. Does everybody know her here? No? Who does? Oh, well, amazing, yeah? In Germany now, I mean, I'm probably contributed to that. Everybody would know her name. Yeah. And she actually had the immense courage to attack the binary structure of our human existence. Can you believe you sit at a desk and you write up in very complicated language so everybody thinks you know more than she knows more than I do, in philosophical hiding, but not, it wasn't hidden all that much. She says, let's do away with the binary structure of human existence. We do away with man and woman. She says, there is no such thing. It's all constructed by society, by language. Just because we have always heard we are a girl or a boy, that's why we behave like a boy or a girl. And this is suppressing, and we have to do away with it. It's a question of choice. Gender. Biological sex has no relevance at all for our being. It is all constructed gender. And so we can do away with it and construct our identity just as we please. She published her book in 1990. The title is Subversion of Identity. Yeah, it's in the title. Gender Trouble, Feminism, Gender Trouble, Subversion of Identity. So this is what she set out. So her ideas were first. They're always ideas first. Somebody sits somewhere and thinks up some theory, and before you know, this is entering society and really changing what society is. She gets the biggest awards you can imagine. She teaches philosophy at the Columbia University, at the California University, at the Swiss University. She is a member of the Rockefeller Foundation, of the Guggenheim Foundation. She receives the highest awards for her work. An honorary doctorate in the University of Fribourg in Switzerland. I was at a award in Frankfurt where she received the Theodor W. Adorno Prize with 50,000 euros, and so on. So she is carried on the hands of the elites of this earth. And the question which we have to put is, why is she useful to them? That is the important question. Why is the LGBT lobby useful to the elites of this world who have the power and the money? That is the important question which we have to keep. Even if we don't have the answer, this question we have to keep up in our mind. Why? Because the 2% of the population who have same-sex inclinations could never exert the power if the powerful were not behind them, much less the promille fraction of people with gender dysphoria. But this is now becoming very fashionable. So it's socialist equality, feminist liberation, and sexual liberation. These three impulses of the student rebellion became the global strategy of a network of global players. The student generation of that time realized they couldn't bring down the bourgeois society in one go. So they were clever. They were academics. And and they woke up much, much earlier than we did. Yeah. And they said and had the slogan, the march through the institutions. We cannot do it on the streets. So we start the march through the institutions to the top where we get to the power. Yeah. That was the strategy. That was the slogan then already expressed. And they actually did get to the top of the power structures of our society, in all areas, entertainment, industry, university, academics, education, schools, law, the whole judiciary system, and of course politics. Yeah, they got into the power positions in the United Nations and the European Union, and built up a network of governance by which they are able, with a very sophisticated process, to change the structures and the minds of people in our time. They are supported by the entertainment industry. As you know, it's all started with getting us used to images of homosexual sex, yeah? And this is going on, and now you hardly see a film without it. And they were supported by, and are supported by, the big global corporations. They are all of them are behind it. Google, Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, the billionaire foundations of Rockefeller, Bill Gates, George Soros. You probably know that the email account of George Soros has been leaked, so we could see 2,000 emails which his foundation sends out. And now we don't have to speak anymore about conspiracy theory, because it's all out in the open. He gives his money, yeah, to all the to the LGBT movement, to the same-sex marriage battle, for the abortion, making abortion a human right, for the climate change issue. And I suppose he also it was proved that he financed all these demonstrations after the Trump election. Yeah. So it's out in the open. Yeah. When we say things like this, you immediately get the reproach, conspiracy theory. And as soon as this is conspiracy theory, you have to shut up. Otherwise, you know, you have nothing more to say. But we are beyond that, because it's just out in the open. The concrete battlefronts of gender ideology, of the gender revolution, are same-sex marriage, acceptance of transgenderism, and the indoctrination and sexualization of children by force of state. All people here agree that a marriage is what it has ever been in all countries, in all times of history, the union of a man and a woman with the aim to give life to children. It has never been anything else. In the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as you all know, it says the family, Article 16, the family is the natural and fundamental group and unit of society and is entitled to protection by society and the state. The fathers of this declaration would never have dreamt that a same-sex partnership could be defined as a marriage. They protected marriage and family as a human right, and marriage and family come before the state. The state depends on it. It's not the other way around. We do not receive the permission to have marriage and families by the state. It's the other way around, and the state should protect marriage and family, because the state depends on families to educate children, to give birth to children, to educate children, to bring them up in a way that they can be loving human beings which do a service to the larger society. We need families for that, and we all see what happens if family breaks down. If you call a frog an eagle, the frog does not become an eagle. It just confuses people who have never seen an eagle. Yeah, and I'm just astounded that all this madness can go on, yeah? And that people do not say this is madness and just do not buy it, that you have judges in your Supreme Court, yeah? You have four wonderful judges who said this is wrong, what is happening here. But how is it possible to deceive people to that degree? It is easy to say there's a nation who wants to reign over the whole world. It's understandable. It's a human impulse. It is easy to understand the proletarian revolution because there really was misery that needed to be a change, yeah? But what is happening now is just, it is a top-down revolution. There's no basis for it. There are no masses who say, oh, I'm so molested by my sex, I have to change that, yeah? These people do not, I mean, there is a psychiatric condition, and it's still in the diagnosis list, yeah? I'm not transphobic saying this. It's in the official diagnosis list. It is a psychiatric condition if you cannot agree to your sex, yeah? It is very amazing, and it is an implemented revolution from the top to the bottom. That is new. Normally, revolutions rise up from a state of widespread suffering, and then society is changed. Same-sex people cannot become one flesh. They cannot procreate. But since all this propaganda is going on of human rights, and we all must have the same marriage for everybody, yeah, is the slogan. We must have the same human right. And if we do not have children, which we cannot have, you are violating the human right of same-sex couples. So what is happening? In some countries, same-sex couples are allowed to buy the ingredients of the child, to buy the sperm at a bank anonymously, to buy an egg of a woman. From her womb it is extracted. It is bought with money. To have this fertilized in a chemical, in a laboratory, then deep freezed. The human being has been created. Yes, sperm and egg have merged. There is a human being. It is deep freezed. It is transported maybe to India, where there are camps of poor women who rent out their body to have a child grow in them, give birth by cesarean, of course. I have been pregnant 3 times. You have a child of a stranger in you, and it grows in you. You give birth, and then a couple stands in front of the door, pays you a check, and takes the child away. Where have we come to? Where have we come to? Is there not a deep, deep, deep erschrecken? Here's my translator. Erschrecken? Well, terror. And why does this not cause deep, deep terror in our souls? What is happening in the midst of us? One thing should open our eyes. The LGBT movement battles for aims it does not want. The estimates are that about, official estimates, that about 2% of the population have same-sex attractions. In countries where you have legalized same-sex marriage, only 2% of the 2% make use of that new legal possibilities. So why is this war going on? If there's only a tiny minority, 2% of 2%, once they have reached that, they couldn't care less, which is no surprise because the life of homosexuals is promiscuous. Yeah, that's the normal lifestyle they have. Why should they want marriage? So they are battling, it's quite obvious, for another aim, and that aim is to destroy marriage and family. If we redefine marriage independent of sex and procreation, why not have marriage between several people, or a whole household? Why not allow sex with animals? Where's the problem? 2016, the Constitutional Court of Germany prohibited sex with animals because the well-being of animals needs to be protected. It could be Robert saying things like this, yeah? But I'm sorry, it is reality. So let's come to the second point, transgender. Mm-hmm. We, from the very beginning of this war, 20 years ago, it was always in the official documents, the letters LGBT. But we were occupied with the homosexual battle. Yeah, we were sort of focused. It's all about the rights, the human rights of people with same-sex attraction. As soon as the Supreme Court of the United States had decided that, had pressed the same-sex marriage on your beautiful country, so that despite all the referendums which have been going on in different states against it, on the next day, President Obama proclaimed the important message to the world that now the White House has a transgender lavatory. Yeah? Right on the next day, so important that we have a unisex toilet in the White House, yeah? But these people are not stupid. They know what they are doing, and their strategies are long-term strategies. Then came this bathroom battle. I mean, can you believe it that the president of this nation, the United States of America, forces the schools to allow transgender people to use the, you know, the a boy who says a girl can go into the a boy can, well, you know, it's, one gets confused, yeah. Immediately after the Supreme Court had this decision, the transgender tsunami began to roll. The message is you can change your sex voluntarily. Judith Butler had formulated in her theory in the 1990s. Just proclaim it. No medical diagnosis is needed. No operation is needed. But of course you are allowed by law to mutilate your own body, and the insurance system will pay for it if this is what you need for your happiness. The problem is no happiness is derived from that at all. But even people, adults who have undergone transgender measures by hormones and even operations, the suicide rate is 20 times higher than in the average population. I looked into the New York City human rights law. It is really amazing, yeah? It says a businessman has to call the person by the pronoun the person chooses. And if he doesn't do that, and he now has to ask not only the transgender people, but everybody, what pronoun would you like to be called with? He or she, yeah? And if we do not do that, you are discriminating, and you can be taken to court, and the fines are up to $200,000, yeah? You cannot prescribe clothing during work just for one sex. Either everybody has high heels or nobody has high heels. Either everybody has a ponytail or nobody has a ponytail. That is written into the law of human rights law of New York City. Again, it is something for Robert to dwell on. But the sad thing is this is reality. Norway has just passed a law that you can choose your sex at the age of 16. Homosexual sex, hormonal sex change measures like puberty-blocking hormones have most serious health risks. They inhibit growth and lead to permanent sterility. So we have all these gender dysphoric children, yeah, who sort of pick it up. They may have all sorts of troubles, and children pick up. They know what's sort of juicy in the air, yeah. They pick up this transgender issue and say, I would like, the girl says, I would like to be a boy, or the other way around. And the parents manipulated, their consciousness is manipulated. They say the best thing for the child is to go along with it. And then a child before puberty, where you cannot make very valid decisions for all your life. It takes a little longer to be able to do that. And for instance, say in a marriage, yes, for the whole of life. So children before puberty are exposed to hormonal treatment, which delays puberty. And then they get hormones from the other sex, which leads to permanent sterility. They are kind of pushed into this transgender lifestyle, despite the fact that the suicide rate is 20% higher. What are we doing? Where have we come to? Sexual education, the third point. A revolutionary movement that wants to create a new man must remold the children. Every revolution stretches out its hands for the children to separate them from their parents and mold them according to their revolutionary ideals. This is done through obligatory sex education in schools. The current standards for sexuality education in Europe, issued by the World Health Organization together with the German state institution, advocate the following. You can find it in the internet. World Health Organization, in charge of the health of the world population. They recommend the following, and they are just one organization. Behind it is the UN, the EU, many, many, many other organizations, of course, International Planned Parenthood, who try to convince us that children have a right for sexuality, that it is good to incite them to propose to them sexual activity from babyhood onwards. So in these standards for sexuality education in Europe, this is what they recommend. Masturbation for children beginning in the age group of 0 to 4, and constant encouragement for masturbation in all age groups. Acquaintance with different sexual orientations beginning in kindergarten. Dissolution by giving them books, The Prince Marries the Prince. Dissolution of gender stereotypes in kindergarten. How do you do that? You give boys princess dresses and the girls boxing gloves. You ask them to come in the clothes of the other sex into kindergarten, things like this, yeah? Support of the rights of the child, the rights of the child to sexual activity. Educate them in sexual diversity. There are all sorts of ways how to deal with our sexual drive. And forcing children to verbalize sexual issues, teaching them pornography competence by showing them pornography and saying, well, whatever, yeah, there's an exaggeration, but you get them into the pornography. And preparing children for the first time by forcing them to pull condoms over plastic penises and distinguishing their flavor. The result of these social experiments on the young generation is the destruction of the sense of shame of children, of their innocence, of their very childhood. Yeah. How much longer do I have? Okay. Let me sum up the flaws of gender theory. It is false, unscientific, full of contradictions, and denies reality. Gender theory is a direct attack on the creator and the order of creation. It puts the autonomous individual on the throne of God. The ecological movement demands the respect of nature. Man is part of nature, and can only survive if he respects his own nature. Gender theory denies the difference between man and woman. We have heard this here yesterday before. Every single cell of a woman is female. Every single cell of a man is male. Should this not have any relevance for our existence as a human being? To deny reality is a denial of reason and truth. We are in the post-factual epoch now. The commitment to reason and truth is at the heart of Western science. This is what made Western science great. Humanity is falling back into a pre-scientific era. Heterosexuality is the condition of human existence, of marriage and family. Homosexuality is not. The state should act in service of the common good and not in service of the privileges of minorities. If gender identity is a matter of choice and feeling, there should be every kind of support for people who want to change from homosexuality to heterosexuality. Yet, research and therapeutic help is suppressed and ex-gays are persecuted by the LGBT lobby. To sum it up, gender theory is not a science, but an ideology to change the human being and society according to the interests of the powerful. An ideology that denies reality and the truth of man can only become totalitarian. I have to leave something out. I suppose you are all aware here that we are actually moving into a new totalitarianism where the basic democratic freedoms are restricted. We hear all these cases of bakeries, florists, midwives, professors, preachers and bishops who are forced to quit their business or their profession because they obeyed their own conscience. This is at stake. Do we still have religious freedom? The battle is going on in your country, in some of the states of the United States. Can we still obey our conscience, or do we have to obey the new rules of the state? Social mechanisms ensure that people speak and think and behave politically correct, and it is really a relief that you now have a president who doesn't give... I'm sorry. Oh. Social ostracism, name-calling and stigmatizing instead of rational debate, exclusion from public discourse, denial of employment and career, job dismissal, media campaigns, disruption of events, physical violence. All this is happening, and I could tell you many stories of having experienced these things myself. Can I have 5 minutes more? Thank you. The pressing question is, why is all this happening? In whose interest is it? Who profits from it? Cui bono is the Latin phrase for that. What we see happening is the destruction of everything that gives identity to the person and thus makes him strong. What gives us identity? The things we would die for, or some people would be prepared to die for. That is our religious faith, our family, and our nation. And we are not allowed to draw our identity from religion, family, and nation anymore. It would be foolish to believe that the destruction of identity is an unwanted side effect of politics and strategies that aim for the common good. I do not believe any longer that it is a side effect. I believe that this is intended. We have seen that the rich and powerful push this agenda globally in every nation. We know that the gulf between the rich and the poor is constantly increasing, also in Germany. Fewer and fewer people own more and more of the world's riches. Let's face it. The destruction of identity is what the governing elites of this world want. The UN government, the EU, the billionaires and their foundations, the global corporations, the global NGOs, in short, the global networks of governance. Why do they want it? because these policies reduce world population and create uprooted individuals that are occupied with consumption, sex, and survival. They can be manipulated and controlled. They are unable to stand up against the powerful. Thus, the way is paved to a new world order. We see all this happening. I think it is important to have a clear sight of the historical moment we live in. But what does all that mean for our own life? What can we do? The good news is there are movements of resistance rising up everywhere. There are changes in government in European states, like in Poland and in Hungary, and in the United States of America. There are new conservative parties rising up in many nations. This is a dangerous path. Yeah, if a right-wing political move is not founded in faith, it can go out of hand. It is dangerous what is happening here, and we have no idea where all this will go to. But the conservatives are actually rising up again. There is persistent resistance in the United Nations and the European Union by conservative representatives of nations and NGOs. And they're doing a wonderful job with very little financial means compared to the other side. There are mass demonstrations against same-sex marriage and for the family in many nations. In Mexico, in November 2016, 1.5 million citizens were on the streets, and they actually managed that the same-sex marriage law was not implemented. They tried the same in Paris. Millions of people on the street. The socialist government couldn't care less. Wherever there has been a referendum on the question of same-sex marriage, the people are against it. There's one exception, that is Ireland. The battle was fierce. Millions of money poured into the country for the other side from American sources. The state, the media, even the police were for same-sex marriage, so this was lost. There are battles to define marriage as the union of a man and a woman in the constitutions, especially in Eastern Europe, which through the Iron Curtain had been in a way protected from the sexual revolution of 68. And there are now 13 European countries which have codified marriage in their constitutions as the union of one man and one woman. Every step of resistance is important. We fight for the dignity of man and the freedom of our societies, irrespective of our human calculation, whether we will win or lose. David, when he faces Goliath, says, "The battle belongs to the Lord. Our battle belongs to the Lord." And I'm absolutely delighted the name of the main woman here. Thank you. Sorry, old age. Molly, yes. I'm delighted what Molly says, that we are not going to be nice anymore. And other people said that too. It is time that we proclaim our faith openly. Yeah, it is because we can only, in the political battle, because we can only win with God. And so we might as well say we are his troop. There is hope. I do believe it is necessary to look behind the ideologies of our time so that we can resist the manipulation of our consciousness and the overwhelming pull into evil of the society we live in. How can we nevertheless live joyfully, positively, and with hope? I suppose most people in this hall believe in God, treasure their families, care for their kids, hold on to moral standards, treasure the traditions of their nation. There are millions and millions of people like us in every nation. We are no doubt the vast majority of this planet. Do we believe that God is still in command of his creation? Do we believe that he's preparing a new creation in the midst of the seeming victory of evil? Do we believe that there is resurrection after crucifixion? Do we believe what Mary said 100 years ago, John Henry spoke about it, my immaculate heart will triumph? Do we believe in the second coming of Christ? If so, if we really believe that, we do have hope. Our hope is invincible and cannot be destroyed. Nothing can overcome it. We know that the end of the story of humanity will be good. And finally, do we truly believe in a God who knows you and me, and more than that, who loves you and me as the singular person as which we are created unconditionally? A God who listens to us when we speak to him, who has a plan for our life, who wants to be with us, who wants us to be where he is and prepares a living space for us in eternity? If we live the kind of life that allows our Christian faith to blossom into hope and love, what are we to do in this world now? If this society created a culture of death, we have to build a culture of life. You are all engaged in that. If Western culture has fallen away from God and put the autonomous individual on the throne of God, what do we have to do? Let God be the God of our life. Let us give our life to God. This goes deeper and deeper. We do that. We proclaim it, and then we see how much we still have kept back. So let us do the salto mortale and give our life to God. If Western culture is drowning in demoralized sexuality, thus destroying marriage and family, what do we have to do? Rediscover chastity and contain sexuality in the vessel of marriage. Teach it to our children. Thus we create the space for enduring love and a happy family and healthy children who will create a new society. If radical feminism has debased and disempowered men, debased and disempowered women and mothers, and killed millions of unborn children, what do we have to do? Become true men and women, true fathers and mothers, and rejoice in the complementarity of our nature. Give life and protect life. Let the Mother of God give us the grace to do so. If Christians have become unsure and timid of their faith, what do we have to do? Live our faith and confess it proudly. Christians are called to be the salt and the light of the world. No totalitarian dictatorship can keep us from living the good life. If we do, our eyes will open. We will see clearly, and we will be able to act. God will show you what to do, how to use your gifts for his kingdom, how to save yourself, your family, your country, how to bring America back to life. The enemies of truth and love are strong, but reason, nature, and God are stronger. I thank you very much for your attention.
You have been listening to Gabriella Kubi, the author of The Global Sexual Revolution, Destruction of Freedom in the Name of Freedom.